Welcome to Rhode Island Avenue Radio, where we'll talk about news, education, and opportunities for small businesses on the Rhode Island Avenue Main Street and in Washington, D.C. I'm Michelle Yancey.
And I'm Kyle Todd. Welcome to Rhode Island Avenue Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to another episode of Rhode Island Avenue Radio. How's everyone doing? Hey, Michelle.
Hey, Kyle. How are you?
Hey, good. And welcome back. Welcome back from your vacation.
Oh, thanks.
And happy birthday.
Belated. Thank you.
There wasn't a we, it was me. I kind of, you know, roasted you for being gone
for
a birthday, thinking that you needed to celebrate a birthday somewhere. So.
Okay. Well, I'll be listening to that later on.
Hello to Rodney back on the board back there, the man in charge. We have some great guests to talk with this morning, but first, a couple of quick announcements. As always, we want to thank our sponsors, the Department of Small and Local Business Development and the Department of Housing and Community Development. It is their grant dollars to us that allows us to put on this show, and it also allows us to provide a wealth of services to small businesses up and down the Rhode Island Avenue Main Street corridor. So thank you to DSLBD and DHCD for that. If you would like to be a sponsor for Rhode Island Avenue Radio, well, give me a call at 202-808-9050 or shoot me an email, kyle@riamainstreet.org. So Fall Fest
coming up,
because you know I'm going to keep talking about that until it happens.
I know. It's almost, I mean, I can't believe we're almost there.
I know. September 30th this year from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We amazingly only have like 6 vendor slots left. That's a record for us to that full this early in the registration process. But we've got some great vendors lined up. We are already lined up with some great performers. We just found out that Mayor Bowser will be joining us that day.
Nice.
She'll be doing some opening remarks along with Councilmember McDuffie. So we're excited to have them come out and join us for the day. And it's, you know, fingers crossed the weather's going to be perfect.
Yes.
All will be well. That we don't have a hurricane like, you know, 2 years ago.
Right.
The remnants of one. But anyway, if you're interested in being a vendor for Fall Fest, please visit our website again, riamainstreet.org, and get signed up now, because like I said, we're almost out of slots. If you are interested in being a sponsor for the Fall Festival, it's great visibility. We do lots of posters, we do t-shirts, we do print advertising, tons of social media advertising around Fall Festival, and our sponsors get lots of love in that field. So, again, riamainstreet.org, let us know if you want to get involved. Okay, so let's get down to business, the dirty, dirty business of business trash.
sounds very dirty.
It is dirty. But thankfully, we have...
the cleanup men.
We have resources. So we've got with us Mr. Gerard Brown from the Department of Health. You, Mr. Brown, you are the program manager for
rodent and vector control.
Yes, things that every city needs.
Rodent
and vector control.
Yes, we need those.
Thank you for joining us, Mr. Brown. And we also have Mr. Steve Glaude, the director of the Coalition for Nonprofit Housing and Economic Development. Welcome, Steve.
Good morning.
CNHED is working with DOH to get these grants out to small businesses throughout the District of Columbia. So, gentlemen, thank you for joining us. And, you know, let's dive right in on why get a compactor? Why does a business need a compactor?
Well, a month ago or so, the mayor launched a citywide initiative to help businesses improve their environmental surroundings. Also to help reduce the rodent problem in the District of Columbia, particularly in commercial corridors. I think that there were complaints that there was an emerging, increasing rodent problem. You all work with Main Street. You probably have your own intake around businesses being challenged in that way. So in partnership with DSLBD and the Department of Health and DPW, CNHED has engaged to provide grants to businesses to either purchase or loan trash compactors. The benefit of a trash compactor is that it will make trash removal and trash maintenance and trash containment more efficient. And over time, we think it will also be more cost effective for businesses as well.
So what types of businesses could make use of a trash compactor? I mean, because when I think of a trash compactor, I think of, my growing up, my high school job at the local grocery store that had a trash compactor that was, the size of an 18-wheeler bed.
Right. No, we're not talking compactors that can crush cars. We're talking about economy of scale compactors that can fit efficiently in the back of businesses or other places where they store refuse. The goal is to replace dumpsters with compactors. Dumpsters, as we know, are a safe haven for rodents and for insects and for challenges that hygienic challenges for the area surrounding the businesses. So the idea of getting compactors in for businesses is to provide even small businesses, and I think particularly small businesses. I think large businesses have probably made the investments in compactors in years past. It's the smaller businesses that have either not been able to afford or have not been incentivized to actually replace dumpsters with compactors. So I think it is intended for small businesses, particularly small businesses in commercial corridors, because if you have a string of businesses on a corridor, you have dumpster after dumpster after dumpster, and even if one business owner is very meticulous or efficient, the other businesses may not be as. And so the idea of hitting commercial corridors would mean that where there have been dumpster after dumpster after dumpster, there would now be compactor after compactor after compactor.
Right. So these are for outdoor use?
Yes.
Obviously.
Yes,
okay.
Primarily, yes. I think in entirely. And the grants would allow businesses to either purchase or lease compactors. There are prescribed sizes for the compactors that would work best with the grant program. There are some very simple checklist requirements to apply for the money. The grants can be applied for online, making it more efficient. And it's, any licensed business in the District of Columbia that's in good standing with the business, District of Columbia, meaning having their clean hands, which most businesses do. But the intention is to get these grants out and to get these compactors operational as quickly as possible. So we're actually trying to move and approve as many applications as we can by September 30th at the end of the fiscal year.
Does the grant time end at that point, or you're just trying to get everything
done? We need
done?
To award okay. by the end of, and I think that we are accepting applications up to September 8th, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then we will approve applications on a rolling basis. So if you submit today and we...
You don't have to wait.
You don't have to wait till September 30th to be notified. And, I think that the Department of Health and DSLBD and DPW have really kept this simple. Being a head of a nonprofit, I apply for everything from foundation to federal government grants, so I know grant application processes. This is among the more painless grant application processes that I've ever witnessed because we need to move things so quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Gerard, what do you see as the nature of the growing rodent and vector problem around waste? Is it mainly around specific types of businesses? Is it just about having a whole lot more activities going on? Like our neighborhood, particularly down in the Woodridge stretch of Rhode Island Avenue, Main Street, we suddenly are filling vacant spaces, which is awesome for the economy and for the small business growth, but that's meaning a lot more trash. So what is the impact of that?
Well, it's more trash, more people, more trash. So rats need three things. They need food, water, and shelter. So dumpsters currently allow rats to get the food. So we are seeing an increase in rats because of the increase in food in the mild winters for the last decade. You know, so I've been working for a long time to get these compactors because I've seen them work. We do community meetings, you know, we say take the city back from the rats one block at a time, you know. So we work with businesses one block and examine that block because everything won't work for every block. You know, every block is different. So a compactor might work in some blocks and it might not. And we had a pilot program. To get a rat meeting, you need three things. You need trash problems, rat problems, and people that are sick and tired of it. And then you get a room full of people.
Yeah.
You know. So we had this meeting on Connecticut Avenue where it was shared out, commercial and residential. And I was introduced to the compactor, and the compactors that, because you said the big compactors, that's what people usually think of. But the compactors that we recommend for the small businesses are Untouchables and a VertiPack. So they were created in Chicago because Chicago had a real bad rat problem, and the mayor said, we got to do something. So they have small alleys. So this company created the Untouchable. Chicago Untouchable.
Right. Okay, sorry. Took me a minute there.
Took me a minute, too. I'm thinking, okay, why is it Untouchable?
That's good.
Right. So those compactors, what happens, what makes them better for small alleys is the container actually rolls out to the truck. So the truck does not have to lift the container. Gotcha. You know, so that makes it more usable. And they are rodent-proof. So we, in this alley, alley had a bad problem with rats. They installed the compactor, which is rodent-proof, you know, and it reduced the rats.
Nice.
And I've been on a mission ever since.
Nice.
Well, we need someone like that because I'll tell you, you know, you're used to seeing rats sometimes in alleys at night. But I saw one the other day in broad daylight on a main street. And I thought...
Not our main street.
Not our main street. No, not our main street. Let's be very clear. Not in Ward 5, not on Rhode Island Avenue. But he was walking down the street like he owned it. Like I needed to move out of his way.
Yeah, so. I mean, one of the other things, and I'm not sure if my friend from the Department of Health here would agree, but we have so much development going on in the city, and one of the things that development and new construction does, it kind of displaces settled populations of rodents. And so seeing them on the street during the day, I'm sure is a function of population and population growth. But I also think with all of the amazing development that we have going on in the District of Columbia that we're disturbing settled populations. And so it's pushing them to new places to get the three things that were mentioned that they need, particularly the shelter. So they're places where they've sheltered for a long time. Those places are being dug up. New buildings are being built. And so, and I noticed that in my neighborhood in Southwest where we have a lot of new development going on.
Yeah. And, you know, aside from the compactor thing, for anybody that's listening that has seen rat colonies, we had an instance of a dying tree on Rhode Island Avenue. It was in front of an old building. It was like had nothing to do with trash or anything, but you know there was rats living under that that tree because people were seeing them go in and out
of
this hole. And we contacted DOH through the 311 system, and within I think a day. There was an inspector that came out and looked at it and chucked in some poison baits into the den, and now no more rats.
I mean, and you know, let's be completely, you know, transparent. If a commercial corridor is having an increase and patrons notice it over time, they'll choose to go other places.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There is, I
will. I'm having the heebie-jeebies right now from this conversation.
And so I think that, you know, in addition to sanitation and waste removal efficiency, which are, you know, kind of the platform for doing this, it's also in the business owner's interest and the business corridor's interest to not have that as a branding for your corridor.
Right.
If your corridor is known for having a visible recurring large infestation of rodents, it, eventually people are going to go to other places. It's just it's kind of a customer response, right, in many ways to that.
Well, and you know, Gerard, you also do general vector control work there at DOH, and one of my absolute personal obsessions, and my wife taunts me about this on a regular basis, like, oh God, here he goes again, is mosquito vector control. And so when I see commercial trash cans and or dumpsters with their lids flipped open after a rainstorm, I just imagine all those little puddles of water that mosquitoes are going to start breeding in. And so one of the things that sounds appealing to me about the compactors is that if it's rat proof, it's probably a little waterproof, and mosquitoes aren't going to be getting in there and breeding in the trash.
Correct.
Love that.
Can I just talk about for a minute what DOH does in rodent control?
Absolutely, please.
So we have, the city does have a rodent control program, and we have 9 licensed pest controllers and 4 code enforcement officers, you know, because our thinking is, well, we know when you have a rat problem, it's usually a trash problem somewhere. So we have the inspectors that can issue tickets for overflowing dumpsters, damaged dumpsters, and trash around dumpsters. And like you said, if you call 311, we will respond in 72 hours. We do an inspection in for private and public space. We don't do treatment on commercial property. You know, it's 3 units or less. And we come out, do inspection, and we find evidence of rats, we will apply rodenticides. And we use mainly tracking powder. And tracking powder, we shoot it into the rat burrow, the rat hole. And the powder gets on the rat's fur. And when they groom themselves, believe it or not, they groom themselves, and they ingest the powder, and it kills them. And the benefit to tracking powder versus the traditional baits is it doesn't compete with food. Mm-hmm. So if you had a blue block and you had some chicken beside it, you know, you're going to eat the chicken.
Right.
You
know? Well, who wouldn't?
Yeah, so that's what we do.
All right. So I would love an opportunity just to, because I probably want to do this 2 or 3 times before we finish, is to give people the website where they can go to
Please.
Get information. And so if you go to cnhed.org/compactor, you will find all of the information about the program. You'll have a frequently asked questions page. You'll have a checklist that are all the things you need to apply, and you'll actually have the link there to actually upload the application. And I just want to encourage people to just go to the page, look at it. We're doing information sessions around the city where we come out and talk, and the schedule either is, or by the time I get to the office, will be on the web page, since I'm saying it now, so that people could actually come out. And Gerard and I go to some of these together, and then we do some others with DSLBD, where people can have, you know, an opportunity to ask and get more detailed questions. But everything that you need to learn and need to do are on that website. And again, it's cnhed.org/compactor.
So does the grant cover a certain portion of the cost? How does that work?
The grant covers the purchase or lease of the equipment.
Completely?
It depending on the selection of the compactor. But yes, they have the option of selecting compactors where it will cover the entire cost. So if they wanted a super mega compactor and it's eligible under the program, they would have to make up the difference. But the money that we provide in the grant, which is up to $13,500, can cover, particularly for small businesses, can cover the complete cost. Now, if they need to make adjustments in their space, if they need to remove a wall, if they need to do electrical upgrades in order to handle the requirements. I've talked to a number of developers. I've talked to a number of business owners who've gone through this process. They say that the costs they have to bear are very minimal to do any electrical upgrades or space. I don't think, if you think, imagine the size of a dumpster versus the size of a compactor, I don't think you're going to have space change requirements. But, you know, you might need to put a layer of bricks to elevate it off the ground or something like that. The electrical upgrades, I'm told, are generally not that demanding. So
maintaining it doesn't seem to be an issue?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Once they do the electrical upgrade, the compactor will operate based on meeting the required needs.
And so it sounds like in some instances it's covered completely, as you said. I think it's close.
And I think that also what we've learned is that there are savings over time.
Right.
So there may be some initial upfront costs that the business bears, but there may be less pickups required because of the compacting of trash versus you could have a dumpster sitting for a period of time.
And less rodents.
And less rodents. And less mosquitoes.
Yes.
But also just a more efficient operation.
Right.
The city is growing remarkably. We're doing developments that are the envy of other cities on a large scale basis. I think we also need to keep up with that evolving culture of improvement on a small business basis as well, and
Absolutely.
A commercial corridor basis.
Well, it sounds like a win-win.
So we've been talking about trash compacting, but what about recycling compacting? Can the compactors be? Could they conceivably get two compactors and use one for trash and one for recycle? You know, we got like Zeke's Coffee, you know, they have a lot of coffee cups and napkins and those little sleeves that come out of there, but it's not necessarily, it's not trash,
it's
recyclable papers.
I got to admit, this is the first time this question has been asked.
I win.
You win.
and you won this round of Jeopardy. You know, I'll get back and let you know.
Okay.
And because I'm not certain, I don't know that question has come up. Gerard, I'm not sure if you know.
Well, my focus is on food waste.
Right. Okay.
You know, so the small businesses that we are mainly thinking about, they probably have a container, they call them totes, for the recycle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you have the compactor.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so yeah, the recycle part is a different part because I'm focused on food waste.
Well, they would also have to separate out the recyclables,
right,
which they probably aren't doing unless...
Oh, yeah, they are.
Well,
I'm not saying that Zeke's isn't, but if you go to certain restaurants or sometimes there's just one trash container.
Right.
Unless they're going through it to separate it out.
You know, I think it's a great insight and a great question, mm-hmm, and I'm certainly going to talk to our government partners about how they've thought about this and considered this, and maybe it's a future initiative.
Right.
You know, once we get the waste compacting at a point where we think we're really making strides, maybe that's the time to invoke the conversation around recyclable compacting.
All right, we'll have that. We'll revisit
we'll
that.
We'll come
later
back
on
and update you.
Absolutely.
But one thing that Steve didn't mention, and I know you probably may, is that some businesses are too small to support a compactor so they can share it with other businesses on that block.
Oh, that's a good plan.
And the program supports
that. No, I did forget to mention that, and I'm glad that you did.
Yeah, that's a great idea because, you know, if you've got a couple of small cafes right next to each other, mm-hmm,
And that leads to the point of an installation plan. And so I'm glad you did that. The way the process works, in order to apply, you have to have an installation plan. And the plan addresses the issue of whether electrical upgrades are required. It addresses the fact that you have site control over the space where the compactor will go. And I think that if there were going to be a shared business approach, that would be part of the installation plan as well. So I appreciate you bringing up that.
Oh, that's great information. And I know that you mentioned that you guys are going to be out in the communities talking about this. I've been speaking with, I believe, Mr. Isaiah Brown.
Yes.
About coming out to this corridor. It looks like they may be coming out to this corridor the week of August 7th, which by the time this airs will be August 8th. But I'm sending out an email, so we're just time traveling this one a little bit. They'll be bringing out an actual example, mm-hmm, of the compactor, mm-hmm, and people will be on hand to answer questions. So we're pretty excited about that.
Great.
Pretty excited about that. And I'm also noticing on the website that it looks like some of this can be retroactive. If a business is already purchased a compactor between October 1, 2016 and June 1, 2017. They're eligible for at least a partial grant?
A rebate. Yeah, we want to reward visionaries who are ahead of the game and saw this as a way to contribute to environmental improvements. And so, yes, they can apply and they can get at least a partial reimbursement for having invested.
Okay, let's talk logistics from the business owner's standpoint. They say, okay, I want to do this. I want to have a compactor. It makes sense. I want to do my part. So I know all of the businesses individually contract with refuse removal crews, companies. And so how does this change their bottom line, number one, cost-wise? You may not obviously be able to address the specific dollar amounts, but then do they contract with a new company to pick up the compacted stuff, or is that something that they work with their ongoing trash company with?
I think it's really going to depend on the company that they're currently engaged with. I think that there probably will be a great opportunity to continue. There may be some specific requirements around compactor, and maybe Gerard knows more about this than we do, but that would be part of the installation plan as well. So I think the answer is going to be yes in some cases, and I think it may be no in others.
Okay. So is compactors existing now? You know, and it's companies that collect those containers? Mm-hmm. You know, I had a community meeting, business meeting 2 weeks ago, and the owner of one of the small trash companies came, you know, because it's changing, you know, so they have to be prepared to change too. You know, at first they had some pushback, you know, but now, you know, compactors popping up, so they have to be prepared to collect those containers.
So a trash company, sounds like may need some special equipment to be able to remove the compacted trash?
Yes. So the owner of the company that came to the meeting, he said that he had 8 trucks equipped to collect. And I don't think it's a big adjustment. You know, it's just some connections on the side where they have to hook a wire and pull it up.
Gotcha.
So it's not real complicated.
Okay. All right. So as businesses are considering what to do with the actual collection of that compacted trash, then they need to be working with their existing trash company that's currently removing their stuff to make sure that they have compatible equipment if they want to keep that
company. Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that I appreciate you bringing up that point. The reality is that all waste removal, environmental enhancement in related industries should be in improving their technology. You know, as the city grows, as it populates more and more, and we've brought in 120,000 new residents over the last 10 years, these are the kind of things that happen. I mean, I'll give you an unrelated but another kind of reflection. I was reading an editorial one day talking about the growth in the District of Columbia, and a lot of it tourist-driven, but also a lot of it population-driven. And they said, you know, we ought to actually have traffic cops on Saturday and Sunday. You know, if we want to keep making tourism a user-friendly experience for people coming to the District of Columbia, because if you're in certain parts of downtown that are heavily touristed, traffic can be a nightmare, and somebody could come to Washington and say, well, I've checked that off my list, I'm never going back again, which we don't want to happen. And I think that this is a similar kind of indicator as we move forward as a society, as a municipality. So if the compactor program and its expansion continues, and it encourages, incentivizes, and maybe forces the pickup companies to increase their technology, to enhance their technology, I think that that's a good thing. And maybe one day there'll be a grant program for trash companies who need to do that conversion, so that we can continue to get better and better.
All right.
Can I talk about the mayor's initiative?
Please.
So the mayor really supports the road control program. In April last year, she kicked off an initiative called Rat Riddance. and the compactor grant is a part of that. And some other things that happened after the kickoff, we brought 25 litter compactors, waste cans on the corner. You know, there was a rodent proof, and the idea is we're going to put them where rats are, and if it reduces the rats like I know it will, then it's a possibility that you might see them all over the city.
I want them. I'm right here on Rhode Island Avenue.
Right here,
please.
On Rhode Island.
Right, and another thing that happened is she had 500 litter cans installed that will send the signal to DPW to let them know it need to be collected. Wow. So when you talk about technology, we starting to catch up. And the other part of that, you know, they have a DC lab at DC. It's a new a program, an agency under the city administrator, and it's data driven. They have data scientists, and so they contacted me, and they want to predict with the data from 311 where it might be an increase in rats. So those are some of the things that we're working on now to reduce the rats.
Very interesting. Very interesting. What this is a little bit off the topic of compactors, but since you brought up the curbside compactors, what about something as simple as hoods over the top of the existing trash cans to again, sorry, mosquito control, reduce the amount of rain going down in there? Because we are lucky to have a clean team on our corridor. They remove the trash from those things every day, but it doesn't keep the rain from getting in there and collecting in the metal bin part. They have liners in them, but you know the liners get holes in them, and so water collects in that metal bin and
rust up.
Yeah, mosquito breeding, etc. So maybe we could talk at another time about getting some hoods on those trash cans.
So the 500 that the mayor had placed around the city, they have hoods. The device that tells them that the can is full is in a hood, you know. But that's fine. But my focus, as far as rats, is on rodent proof, and see, rats can get through.
And see, Kyle's focus is on mosquitoes.
Yeah, I'll try not to bring my personal stuff up in there.
And our focus is on both.
Right.
We have a mosquito control program in the district too, in the health department. We actually do larvicide. We do the catch basins to kill the larva for the mosquitoes so they won't grow. We don't actually spray because we think the risk to humans is higher if we spray. So we larvicide, unlike some other cities. You know, and that's, we won some awards for that too.
Well, we'll talk. We'll talk more about
mosquitoes
later.
He'll get you offline about that.
But anyway, all right. So get information about this this grant at cnhed.org.
And you have until September 8th.
2 p.m. at September 8th. And you guys have some assistance for actually filling out those applications?
Absolutely. We actually have a contractor and an intern who Isaiah is an intern, and he's learned this very well, that will assist. On the website, there's a number that you can call where you'll get the two people who are helping to implement the grant. We can answer any questions or provide clarifications. If we don't know answers, we have the Department of Health and DSLBD and even DPW able to give us, if you know, they're really granular answers that we need to get into. I want to just reiterate again that we really are trying to move fast. We've designed a user-friendly process, and we hope that people will have interest and come out to the public forums, call us for questions, but we think we can give out 65 of these if we can get enough eligible applicants between now and the end of the fiscal year. I'd also just like to, because I can tell we're winding down, just commend the mayor for her vision in wanting to dig deeper into how to create business-friendly and business-supportive initiatives and environments. I also have to say that partnering with the Department of Health and DPW and DSLBD has been an amazingly painless process. You know, sometimes partnering with government can get you trapped into bureaucracy and regulations. This has been one of the more faster moving processes that I've ever been a part of, and I'm old. I've done a lot of these. This has been more. And I also want to commend Rhode Island Avenue Main Streets, not just for supporting this, but in all of the work that you do. Some of the businesses along the corridor are actively involved with CNHED. They constantly report back to us all the ways that you're trying to help. So I want to commend Rhode Island Avenue Main Streets as well.
Well, thank you very much. For that, you get an extra 5 minutes.
Yes.
we would love to have both of you back in the future to talk about the implementation of this and next steps. And we'll talk about those curbside cans and how we can get them up here. So thank you, Mr. Gerard Brown from the Department of Health and Steve Glade from CNHED. Business owners, will get information out to you about the example truck being out here. Is that what we're calling it?
Example? The example truck, yeah.
Yes.
Being out here the week of August 7th. And if you have any further questions, just reach out to one of us, and we'll see how we can help you get this in place for yourselves. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you
so much.
Okay, now it's time to check in with Casey at Good Food Markets. Good morning, Casey.
Good morning, Kyle. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
We're doing fine. What's going on at the market this week?
I feel like I say this every single week, but we really are getting into summer now.
Hold on. We're talking about Fall Fest. We're getting into summer.
It's such a crazy weather pattern, right? I mean, it's either sweltering hot or torrential downpours. So you can only imagine what the farmers are dealing with as far as growing conditions.
Right.
This is like the latest stone fruit season we've ever seen in this area. We're still getting into the local peaches and some of the cherries. I mean, and it's August, right? This is when we should mostly be eating corn and tomatoes, and you're supposed to be eating the berries and the stone fruit, you know, July.
You are right about that. The peaches are just kind of getting in and getting good. I finally got a good peach the other day.
And that's, you know, that's kind of the sad part about it, too, is that they're here. And to be honest, I've been a little disappointed in even some of the stuff that we've been getting. You know, the farmers are eager, so they're picking these things because they see them. But they're coming in pretty hard. It's
yep.
one of those,
not very
I'm very
sweet.
Against ripening in the window. You know, I want to pick it when it's ripe, and I want that thing to be rotting the second day that I have it. but, you know, they need to be picked for travel.
Right.
And so they're coming in pretty hard. And they do ripen if they've sat on a windowsill, but it's just not the same. You know, even for the local stuff, it's really hard to get something of good quality anymore. But we certainly try to procure as locally as possible to just eliminate that travel time, make it as short as possible so that you guys are getting the freshest thing. We're getting things like these local peaches, and then we're starting to get some peppers, too. All kinds of peppers. This is that time when everyone should be making pepper jellies and hot sauces, pickled peppers, because these pepper plants all are indeterminate. So the more that you pick, the more that you end up growing.
Wow.
And we're just drowning in them right now. So come on by and buy piles of peppers. They're super duper cheap.
Piles of pickled peppers.
Pecks of pickled peppers.
Piles of pickled peppers.
Right?
Yeah.
So I know that this isn't necessarily local, but do y'all ever get Hatch green chilies in?
Oh, gosh. So I know that there are a lot of farmers in this area who are trying these specialty varieties. We've never gotten Hatch chilies in, but I wouldn't be surprised if there were people growing them. When I was in agriculture, we would grow any rare pepper variety that we possibly could. And a lot of the time, you know, it is humid enough in this mid-Atlantic region to grow those kinds of things. So we don't have them here at the shop, but I wouldn't be surprised if you could find them somewhere in this area.
Well, they are delicious. Every summer where I'm from, Texas, we get Hatch chilies from New Mexico, and there's big roasting parties, and then there's Hatch chili everything, and it's
totally
amazing. It's amazing. There was even Hatch chili ice cream one place. But.
Oh, God. No, do you see how he brings everything back to ice cream?
I can do. Hatch chili ice cream? Probably not.
Yeah. Everything comes back to ice cream.
You know, if you can
come back to ice cream with Kyle.
Well, it does. But if you can make.
You have a blueberry ice cream from Trickling Springs.
Oh.
So that's our fun seasonal.
You guys had that last summer, and it was quite delicious.
Yeah, blueberry flavored anything is the best. I mean, it's especially appropriate for summer. But yeah, we've got the blueberry ice cream. And we've tried the sweet corn ice cream from Trickling Springs here, and I don't think that's totally a Texas thing, right, Kyle? You guys do a lot of sweet corn ice cream down there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Why? Not really.
I was busy eating the hatch chairs. Anyway.
But yeah, did you guys see our article in the Washington Post?
Yes, we did.
Super excited about that.
Yeah. We love that you are consistently providing great services to a broad, diverse audience of customers. And how's the delivery program going?
It's going really well. So we're really excited about that. This is now probably week three of the delivery program. And again, this is the pilot program that the mayor launched. And we do want to expand as we move into fall. Currently, we're serving 75 seniors in Ward 5. And we think that we have the capacity to go up to 100. And then, you know, by the end of this year, we would ideally be serving close to 300 seniors in Ward 5. That's individual senior homes. And so, you know, there are a lot of things that we're working on right now. We mentioned it in our newsletter. And if you read the comments to that article, there are a lot of really interesting discussions happening around, you know, issues of gentrification and appropriateness of these neighborhood stores that are moving into traditionally underserved communities. You know, this is an ongoing conversation that we have with the neighborhood. We are here to serve, right? We're here for you guys. And if we're ever not meeting the right mission, you know, that's an open-ended conversation. And we want to engage with the community on where it is we're doing well and where we could improve. And we invite anybody to, you know, come into the shop, talk to myself or Philip. And if you have, if you know, you want to do that in an online forum, you know, we're all over the web on Facebook and Twitter. We have an open comments form on our website. But this is something that, you know, it's specifically in our neighborhood. We've been here now for almost 3 years, and we're really invested in the success of Woodridge and Langdon. And as we continue to grow and see some success, we certainly want to, you know, keep our mission in mind, and always do the right thing.
Well, as always, you guys, never fail to be leaders in your field, and, you're certainly, a valuable, neighbor for us here on Rhode Island Avenue Main Street. So keep up the good work.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Michelle.
So remind listeners where they can find Good Food Market, please.
Yeah, come in and say hi. We're on the corner of 20th and Rhode Island. It's 2006 Rhode Island Avenue Northeast. We're online at goodfoodmarkets.com. And you can also engage with us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. All of those links are on our website. We're open from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. on weekdays and 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. on weekends. But we're here 7 days a week, ready to serve.
All right. Thank you so much, Casey. Have a
good
weekend.
Kyle.
See you, Casey.
Michelle.
Thank you. So today we're welcoming Marvin Tucker of the O'Case Foundation to the studio. Hi, Marvin. Welcome.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing outstandingly well.
Great. Why don't you tell our listeners about the O'Case Foundation?
O'Case was formed 7 years ago with the premise on helping students further their education through athletics. So we use athletics as a carrot to help students stay in school and get an education.
What grade levels and age levels do you work with?
Well, we're all over the spectrum right now. We're a broad range from elementary to high school. We do high school all-star games, middle school all-star games. We had a parent summit because parents need to know what it takes to help get their kids educated when they fall into situations like special education. So we do a parent workshop on special education and social media so parents can understand what their children are talking about when they're texting online.
Okay. So how does the athletic piece work? I don't understand how that would work for maybe a student that is not athletic. So I know you all try to help all students. But
well, what we do is we actually tie students into to some of the best situations. So we feel like in today's age, in order to keep kids occupied, it's not like it used to be back in the 60s and 70s where you had true recreation programs where kids could go to the rec after they did the homework, get involved in the athletic. Because athletics could be anything from chess to band to walking. All that's considered athletics. So,
okay, you don't speed over that, because when you say athletics, people think of basketball, football, soccer, people don't typically think of chess. So I think that's an important piece to note.
Right. And so when you consider chess and other activities that even drill teams, marching bands, being part of the debate team is actually athletics because you're using your mind to debate with. So that's an athletic, and it's actually considered an after-school program. So all of those things actually can actually fall up under athletics.
Okay. So how does the program work? How does the foundation work? Does someone sign up their kid or...
Well, we don't reinvent the wheel. What we actually do is tie in partnership. We believe in partnerships. So we have a partnership with the D.C. Public Schools Athletic Department and the State Office of Athletics. And what we do is try to enhance the programs in which they've already started. We try to be with what some people call a stopgap measure when think you could do this over here, but you can't do this. So when we do our All-Star Games involves every student in the District of Columbia, no matter what school you go to. So we're in the public parochial and private schools, and along with the charter and the public schools. So we gather kids together that might not see each other, might not even play against each other, but on for that week, they get a chance to practice, get to know the people that they read about on a weekly basis in the Washington Post and what have you.
Okay, that sounds pretty exciting. What type of parental involvement is needed or required? Because that's always an important piece when it should be an important piece when dealing with kids.
Well, that's the biggest piece because parents, you know, and I say this because I'm a parent, sometimes they get a bad rap for what they do and what they don't do. You know, in the day and age of the single parent, you know, with one parent, four or five kids in the household, they need that extra added support. So what we do is everything that we do is parent-student guided. So, you know, the parents are really involved in our programming.
How did you get involved in this type of work? You said it started 7 years ago. You obviously saw a need, I would imagine.
Well, I saw a need because I coached high school football for 25 years at Anacostia under Coach Willie Stewart. And also my mentor is Coach Jones, who gave me my first job at Cadoza Senior High School. So it's getting the chance to firsthand see what these kids go through and what the lack of and what we could do to help support them. And so that gave us that onus to do it. And then former Mayor Gray came to our All-City Bowl. And one of the things that he wanted to do was he said, Marvin, there's going to come a time where Dad would like to see that every kid gets to participate under one roof. And so we took up that
challenge. Every kid in the city.
Every kid in the city, regardless of where you live or go to school. And so we took that challenge to heart, and we created OCASE.
So how many children do you all serve right now? What's the percentage of schools, maybe the maximum? I imagine it changes year to year.
Well, if you add the programming in which we have, so if you were to add the backpack giveaway, the clothing, the food drive that we have in November, our coat giveaway in December, and along with our sporting events, you could talk anywhere from 3,000 to 4,000 to 5,000 kids a year.
Wow.
Just based on programming.
So what about the athletic piece of it? Because we've talked about that now. I know you all have an upcoming event with a backpack, which we'll talk about. But the athletic piece, is that just during the school year?
Well, it's actually year-round.
Okay.
Based on different partnerships, we just created another partnership where we work with a gentleman out of Upper Northwest where they take kids away for the summer to Guatemala. So the kids teach the folks over there how to play basketball, and then the folks over there teach the kids over here how to speak Spanish. So,
So
that program is in place. We worked with, and that partnership came through a company called Adams Development, most people don't give some of these companies around their due, but these folks tie two nonprofits together. We've worked together when they come to that piece of the pie.
That's a great program.
That sounds amazing. How do you all get your funding for these types of events and things?
Well, fortunately, we do it the hard way. The hard way is as my staff would say, you know, we go out and we beat the streets. As you know, you guys are nonprofit, so you know what it's like raising money and getting government grants is just so time consuming. And then by the time you get a grant, you know, that year's passing, then you got to, you know, do it all over again, and try to work that grant. We do a lot of things through private funding from folks like Douglas Jamal, Adams Development, Coca-Cola, Utz, TD Bank.
Oh, these are some big names.
NBC, Comcast.
Investing in kids benefits all of us.
Yes.
They are the future, so.
And this year we got the Office of Cable Television that came on board, so they came on board this year to support us as well.
So the backpack giveaway.
Let's talk about that. That's coming up. School's about to start, as Kyle wants to talk about Fall Fest. That means school's about to start.
Right, get those kids back learning good stuff. But the backpack giveaway, that happens, you do that each year in the Rita's parking lot. And that is an event.
And it's an event, and it's coming up August the 26th at Rita's from 1 to 5. It's great because we give anywhere about close to 3,000 backpacks to kids every year. We do health screenings, you know, thanks to Kaiser, who is one of our partners, along with the Howard University Dental School. So we do dental screenings. TD Bank comes out and do financial literacy and then helps kids where, you know, and this is a great program for me because I like what TD Bank is doing. They're actually, you come out, you go to their tent, they sign you up, and a student can get their own bank account, and so they'll learn how to start saving early. So those are the things in Kaiser with the screenings and Howard Dental Clinic with the, you know, the health, giving health information. And then, you know, it wouldn't be possible without Ms. Brock and Ms. Walker's help because they've opened up their facility and the neighbors back there on Kearney Street the last 3 years. You know, every time we say we would like to do this, and they've been real great for us, helping us put this event on.
You said that's August
26th.
From what time to what time?
1 to 5.
Okay.
And it's not just backpacks. I mean, these backpacks are full of supplies for school.
And so this is open to any DC
kid, no matter where you live.
What if you don't have your parent with you that day? You just come on up.
Well, no, because the parent is an important piece.
That's why I want to point
the parent. The parent is an important piece.
Yes, because parents don't just send your kids up there. Come with them.
Parents have to accompany students in order to sign up.
Yes, that sounds terrific. What else do you all do throughout the year? You mentioned a coat giveaway or a food drive.
That's coming up in November on the 16th at Campbell AME Church. We've learned how to partner with the religious community as well. So with Campbell AME Church, we do a Thanksgiving concert where we feed 100 families in Ward 8. And we just don't give them turkeys. We give them a complete basket so they have enough to last about a week by the time they do what we do. And then we have a great partnership with the Ward 7 Dems, where we help supply coats where they identify schools in Ward 7, and they give away coats to needy students in the month of December.
That's terrific. The kids are the future.
Yeah, and you know, and it's not about being that person that you always have to be at the front. You should be able to partner because it takes not all chiefs but some Indians to get that point across.
Absolutely.
So if folks want to find out more details about what you do, what the OCASE Foundation does, the website is OCASE, which is OCASE foundation.org. There's an event calendar. There's great information about the backpack and school supply giveaway on Saturday, August 26th from 1 to... I'm sorry, I don't
1
have
to my, 5.
1 to 5. Thank 1 you. To 5. Didn't bring my bifocals.
That's okay.
And all of the different galas and games and extravaganzas you got going on. And I would imagine that if folks wanted to volunteer to help you out, they could probably find out information there.
You just read my mind. They volunteers.
We've been fortunate, and Cal brought up the gala, and we did that. That was a fantastic event, and Regina Bell performed for us. We had Regina Bell come in and perform for us. But we've also had, other folks like Clinton Portis from the Washington Redskins, Josh Morgan from the Washington Redskins, and you know, we owe that all to another partner, like I said, Partners Capital Public Relations. So we're reaching out to the athletic, athletes in the area to come out and support these kids. We've given backpacks away to the homeless shelter down on New York Avenue and the National Guard Armory in the last 2 years. So we've done a lot to help the folks in the community.
That's important work. Remind us of the email address one more time, Kyle.
The web address,
yes.
OCASE Foundation, that's OCASE Foundation. .org. And Marvin, can they get a hold of you there? Marvin at?
Yeah. You can actually get hold of me at OCASE@OCASEFoundation.org.
OCASE@OCASEFoundation.org. That's how you can get in touch with Marvin Tucker to tell him you want to volunteer to help him at these events. Or
if you want to donate some money to
the cause. You
want to
be a sponsor here. Yeah. Sponsorship.
We love
seeing the dollars come in. That helps keep us going. And that, like I said, without that, we cannot survive.
Right.
And so we need as much as we can get of that as we can.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Marvin, for coming in and telling us about the OCASE Foundation. All are doing some good work.
Well, thank you for having me, and I look to continue to do fantastic work in this part of the city.
Great.
We will see you on Saturday, August 26th, from 1 to 5 p.m. at the OCASE Foundation Backpack Giveaway. All right?
All right.
All right.
Thank you very much.
So, thank you all for tuning in again. This is going to wrap up another episode of Rhode Island Avenue Radio. Michelle, it's always good to see you.
Good to see you.
Happy belated again.
Thanks.
We'll talk to you all next week.
All right.